Hello, my friends. Good evening. Happy Tuesday. Thank you so much for joining us today on another edition, an important edition of the JMAC podcast. So glad that you are here with us tonight. Again, I'm broadcasting live from Lehi, Utah. We do this on Tuesdays and Thursday nights starting at 9:30 p.m. And then I do pre-recorded broadcasts throughout the week. Paul Pickett already liking the stream. Thank you, Paul, for the like. Those of you joining us on TikTok and Podbean, hello. Say hello. Let me know where you are listening in from. And also, if you are on YouTube, Facebook, Twitch, everybody else, say hello and let me know where you are joining us from. Jenny Nilsson liking the stream. Thank you. Lots of people tuning in on TikTok as well. Hello, Jose, Josh, Melissa, Sienna, Coach Sturge. Thanks for joining us. I can see your comments here and put them up on the screen. But then I also have Podbean comments, and we also have comments from our other listeners as well on Facebook. Tonight, I have an important discussion with you. I'm sure you heard about it by now if you live in Utah. If you haven't, you're going to be interested in this. It's a very important discussion about race and race relations. And it comes on the heels of the Skyview High School controversy. An attempt to try and build bridges and to help people overcome racism actually turned into a race controversy. And so I want to tell you this story, and I want to get your feedback on it. Also, an effort here in the state of Utah to get rid of mail-in ballots. We'll talk about that. And which counties do you think are getting hit the hardest by COVID? Biden counties? Counties that went for Biden in the election, or counties that went for Trump in the election? So lots to talk about as well. Again, if you're joining us on TikTok, please take a minute and say hello. Let me know where you are listening in from. The same Woody joining us on Podbean. Hey, Woody, thanks for joining us and for saying hello. Podbean and TikTok, I have to bring your comments up on a separate overlay. So there's Woody entering the studio. And on on TikTok, here your comments come up this way. So hey, Cheryl. So you can see lots of people joining us on TikTok. Well, it's my way, my workaround to bring everybody from all the social media networks to be able to join us in at one time. Nick says his prediction is that it's the Biden counties. Now, the question is, which counties are getting hit the hardest by COVID? Counties that went for Trump or counties that went for Biden? So we'll answer that question. Before we dive into any of it, I want to take a moment and remind people that it is Pearl Harbor Day. And one of the things that I used to do with my children when they would come home from school on 2 days of the year, September 11th and December 7th, and ask them if anybody at their school mentioned in any way, shape, or form Pearl Harbor Day. And maybe it's something you can ask your children. I'd like to know if it's still being taught. As you know, if we don't learn from history, we're doomed to repeat it. You can't learn from it if it's not taught. And on this date, I want to remember and give thanks for the people who died on that day and their families and those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. Thank you for your service, and what a day to remember, and a day of infamy, as it was called by FDR at the time. So, please take a minute. If your children weren't taught about December 11th, please take a minute and share it with them. I'm sure there are some great videos with that can describe what happened on Pearl Harbor Day. Of course, it depends on how old your children are. But I would recommend that if your schools aren't sharing that information, that you take the time to share that information. Very important. Okay, let's see. Heather saying my third grader came home and told me she learned about Pearl Harbor. Awesome, Heather. That's great to hear. Awesome. Mike says, I'm already seeing a problem with the counties being affected since the population of those counties vary widely on a national basis. Well, this is, obviously I'm going to share a study with you, Mike, but it's per 100,000 people. So it takes into account populations, not just individual counties. So we will talk about that and get to it. But first of all, let's jump into this controversy at Skyview High School. So they had some problems. This is here in Utah, but this discussion needs to be had everywhere. So if you're on TikTok and you're joining us from another state or even out of the country, the issue of racism in our society and how we choose to confront racism and our history is an important discussion. And I'm afraid we live in a time where when it's brought up, people immediately go to their corner, they slap a label on it, and then they don't have to deal with it. And that's exactly what happened here. I'm also afraid that highly educated people have no clue or concept how to deal with the issue of race. It's shocking to me how this gets handled. And it's so amazing when you're trying to maybe build bridges that your actions actually destroy bridges. We saw this with the label Black Lives Matter. I've told you I've never had a problem with the term Black Lives Matter, but it is divisive. And I think that they would have been much better off calling themselves All Lives Matter. And then that would have gotten rid of so much of the issue. But they chose something up front that would create controversy. And then the debate becomes about the name Black Lives Matter instead of the cause of Black Lives Matter. This is exactly what we see at Skyview High School. So here's the deal. They had somebody show up on Halloween at the high school in a KKK costume. I mean, just abhorrent, right? I don't know who the parents are that let this happen. Maybe they didn't know that somebody would show up to high school in a KKK outfit. And then somebody else showed up as a basketball player, and they had put on dark makeup. Both of those things, one more than the other, considered highly taboo in our society. So what did Skyview High School do? They decided to have a rally where they get together and they try and help people understand why it is that these two actions and other related actions are not good. And I have no problem with them having the rally. I have no problem with them wanting to help people understand why racism is not healthy and also understand our history with racism. I've told you many times, I think it's critically important that we teach the history of this nation, both when it comes to slavery, when it comes to Jim Crow laws, when it comes to segregation, when it comes to racial profiling, when it comes to any form of discrimination. Not just that, but also when it comes to women and suffrage and the right to vote. These things have to be taught to our children. Now, how we teach them is going to determine the outcome, right? Will it be well received? Will you change hearts and minds? At this assembly, they chose to show a video that guarantees the wrong outcome. It guarantees the exact opposite outcome of what you're looking for. And I can't believe that this was their course of action. I just can't believe it. And I can't believe that people think that these tactics are going to have an impact. I just can't believe it. Jenny says, I'm glad that you're talking about this. Skyview is in my area, and I unfortunately haven't heard much about it or looked into it, but we definitely need to talk about it. Okay. Let me see if I can show you some of this story so I make sure that I get it all right. Let's bring it up here. So this is KSL.com. It started out as an assembly at a Utah high school, in part to address recent racist actions by students, but then quickly turned into a major point of contention within the community. They invited newly appointed Davis School District Assistant Superintendent Jacqueline Thompson to give a presentation on race and racism following an incident about a month earlier, in which a student wore blackface and stood on stage with other students in costume during a Halloween assembly. Another student came to school that day donning KKK regalia. Just unbelievable. This according to the Cache County School District spokesman, Tim Smith. Toward the end of the presentation, the students were shown a music video titled 400 Years, a song written and performed by musician Greg Miller. This is the source of much of the contention, this video. And this is where I get so frustrated. I get frustrated, for several reasons. First of all, I've told you that there becomes a risk when you're fighting against social injustice that you start to embrace the very tactics that you abhor. And I believe that this video does this. And not only that, it immediately guarantees from the very beginning that people are going to tune out. And this is what boggles my mind, okay? This video is, it's a song about racism. It's a song about history of this country. It depicts race riots, police brutality. It depicts George Floyd. It depicts all of these things. And my issue is not necessarily with the imagery. Although I think that even that, in the way it is presented, is misguided. My issue is the language. In fact, the very first line of the song guarantees that nobody's gonna listen. And you gotta ask the question, are people gonna be receptive to your message? How can you create a message that people will respond to? So let's think about this. You're addressing a bunch of people, and you think among that people, there are those who don't understand racism. They don't understand the history of our country. What is your first line going to be to them? What is your initial message going to be to them? Here's the first line of the song. And by the way, I would play it for you, but the minute I do, I'm going to get flagged for copyright and the video is going to get taken down or muted. So that's why I'm not playing it for you. But here's the first line of the song. Quote, "I get that I can't understand because of the color of my skin." That's the first line. You got all these students together, you got everybody gathered in, you want to find a way to help them understand why racism is bad, and the first thing that they hear is, "You can't understand because you're white." That's the first thing they hear. It's asinine. I want you to think about this. You're going to meet with a bunch of people and you think they're all racist and you want a breakthrough with them. You want to change their hearts and minds. Do you lead with "you're a racist and you can't understand"? Is that your opening line? Think about this. The first line, "I get," and basically the song is all from the perspective of a white privileged person who can't understand racism because of the color of their skin. It's almost like you're giving them an out by saying, "You can't understand because you're white." Well, if that's the case, then why are you trying? I don't get it. I just don't understand. Again, the first line of the song. "I get that I can't understand because of the color of my skin." What? This is how you create a receptive audience? Another line, I'll stop using my privilege to look away. Let me tell you something. There is no way that you're going to change hearts and minds leading in this way. And not only that, if you're teaching right out of the gate is that you're a racist because you're white, I believe you're engaging in the very practice that you don't want engaged in. You're not judging people by the content of their character. You're judging people by the color of their skin. And I believe that the idea that all white people are racist because of their color of their skin is just as dangerous as judging any skin color and assigning things to the entire group. You do not know the content of people's character. You do not know their upbringing. You do not know what is in their heart and in their mind. And if you want to open their eyes to understanding, it is ridiculous to lead with the statement that says, you can't understand because you're white. Because you chose to lead with that, the entire focus became about that. Instead of leading with, do you want to know what you should lead with? I'll tell you what you should lead with. I'll tell you how to have this discussion. And if you ever want this discussion to have an impact, if you ever want people to listen to this message, you cannot lead with you can't understand because you're white. And you better leave the concept of white privilege out, because you immediately turn all of the switches off. You immediately turn everybody against you. So do you want to create a controversy, or do you want to share a message that people might want to hear? What do you think? What do you think is going to make people open their hearts and their minds to this being a problem? Especially if you don't think they even know, if you believe they're secretly a racist and they don't even know that they're a racist. How are you going to open their heart and their mind to that understanding? Are you going to do it by saying, you can't understand your white privilege? You can't understand because of the color of your skin. I just can't believe that any educated adult would think that this is a viable path to changing hearts and minds. This is the path to exactly what happened. It turned into a school board meeting of a bunch of parents freaked out because they had to go to a rally where they were told that they can't understand because of the color of their skin. How could you not know that this was going to happen? How could you not know? I'm blown away with this. Mike says, those opening lines, you're too dumb and racist to understand. I just don't get it. Mike says, and LMHO, that opening line is no accident. It is designed to inflame. It is not designed to change hearts and minds. It is designed to divide. If it's not purposely designed for that, it is a complete miss. And it guarantees the opposite behavior of what you're looking for. Because the way to get through to people when it comes to racism, just humanize it. Don't make it about the person listening. Don't label them a racist. Say, hey, by the way, you're a racist and you shouldn't be. So I'm going to show you a bunch of videos. And by the end, you'll not be a racist anymore. There's only one way to make people care about these kind of issues. It's the same with immigration. It's the same with LGBTQIA issues. We talk about it all the time. You're not going to have empathy and understanding for somebody until you know them. And if you're just labeled as something and the expectation is, hey, if I label you, you'll change your ways. It's just so ridiculous. It's so outrageous. Here's what you do. You tell stories. You humanize it. Tell these same stories that the videos were from. Share the history. Don't label people. Appeal to their humanity. Tell the stories of individuals that have been affected by it. You've had two instances in your school. One where somebody shows up in a KKK outfit. Another where somebody shows up as blackface. You decided to play a song that labeled them as a racist right out of the gate. And you thought they would say, oh, now I understand why I shouldn't. And again, I don't have all the language of this rally. So maybe they did some of this. I don't know. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt. But this video was the absolute worst thing that you could have played. The absolute worst. Why don't you share stories about why blackface is bad? Why don't you take some time and share people? You've had two instances here, one with the KKK and one with blackface. Why don't you spend some time, and maybe you did, but the video certainly doesn't, and say, here is why in our society, blackface has come to represent something. Even if you're well-intentioned, this is why blackface stirs up something in people. Let me tell you some stories about the history of going blackface. And then I'm going to tell you some stories about the KKK. And here's why you don't want to endorse, pretend to be, or even joke about the KKK. But along the way, you've got to get them to care about the group of people that you don't want them to be racist against. You have got to generate something in them that makes them feel empathy and care. And you can only do that by humanizing. I guarantee you, I can go back in my life and I can share with you the times when I was carrying around stereotypes and false information about groups of people. I've shared them with you on this show. And it took experiences one-on-one with those individuals and learning their stories and their history for me to understand that my prejudgments were false. That's how you change hearts and minds. That's how you get breakthroughs when it comes to people. You humanize, and it's the one thing we don't do in our society anymore. What we do right now is we label, we divide, and we attack. If I'm putting on a rally at a high school, I'm not labeling the people in the audience. That's a guarantee fail. What I am doing is helping people see and understand why certain actions are perceived in a way that could be very painful. And do you really want to be the cause of that kind of pain? And how would you feel if similar actions were aimed at you? The other problem here is that you have two people that I'm aware of that did some things that are absolutely taboo in our society. But you treated the entire audience as though that line, I get that I can't understand because of the color of my skin. You wanna end a conversation before it even starts? Call someone a racist right out of the gate. You think that they're gonna grow some kind of understanding for you? It's not gonna happen. It is not going to happen. This was foolish. And you had an opportunity to make people care. And to this idea that because you are white, you can't understand. This is so dangerous. It is so against judging by the content of character. It is absolutely judging people by their skin color. When you know nothing about their perspective, you know nothing about their heart, you know nothing about where they've been or what they've been through. You know nothing. You look at me and you instantly judge, oh, this guy's been in talk radio for 20 years. He's white. So he clearly could not understand. Now, I admit openly, I cannot fully comprehend and understand what it is like to grow up black in this country. But that doesn't mean that I don't have empathy and understanding for it. And certainly my perspective and my life experience has opened my heart and my mind up to tremendous growth and tremendous understanding. And you would throw that all away for the color of my skin. Remember, you got to be careful when you're fighting against an injustice. If somebody isn't defining who you are to become in that battle, then you have a tendency to become the very thing that you hate. And if you have allowed yourself to come to a place where you can look at me and you can say, there is a racist, and you've done so because of the color of my skin, then you, my friend, are in too deep. You've gone too far. You are participating in the very behavior that you abhor. But worse than that, you're not going to solve anything. You're probably going to make it worse. You're not going to open any hearts. You're not going to change any minds. You're just not. David Danes on Facebook says, stories have power. That's why great leaders, the MLK and Lincoln, had a powerful effect. These leaders did not appeal to hatred. They appealed to higher angels. That's why the content of their character is so important. They wanted to define who you become in the battle just as much as wanting to win the battle. This is something you know that I have been fighting against on the right aggressively right now because we've become so toxic, so hateful, so demeaning that I believe we've lost our soul in fighting for a tax cut or against a social program. And good leadership defines us and helps us stay out of that toxicity. This type of thing just creates toxicity. And that's why it frustrates me so much. Heather says, unfortunately, labeling persons have worked, sort of. People are so afraid of being labeled that they'll do anything to try to remove that label. Like when police chiefs apologize for racist cops, all of the while throwing their entire police force under the bus. I will tell you there are a lot of people in my profession who will not talk about it because they're afraid of the label. I'm not afraid of the label. And maybe my perspective is different because of how I was raised. But you wouldn't know my perspective until you took the time to hear it. You just look at the color of my skin and assume that you know my perspective. Is that right? I don't think that's right. We got somebody. Oh, he's gone on Podbean. dropping a lot of expletives. He's already gone. I'm not going to share those with you. Let's see if anybody has any comments on TikTok. Mostly people just joining in. If you are on TikTok and you're joining us, please take a minute and say hello. I'd love your comments. Mike says, you don't understand what it's like to know what it's like to grow up as a house cat, but you should sure can understand that it's wrong to abuse a house cat and speak on the nature of it. Yeah, I could never tell you that I fully understand what it is like growing up black in America. But I have spent a huge part of my life studying every aspect of that particular subject. I also grew up in a place where I was the minority. And I don't say that for you to believe that I faced what black people or other minorities face. I didn't. But in my high school, the smallest demographic was white people. All of my friends were either Asian, Hispanic, or black. I was the only white person in my group of friends. I didn't experience anything that I would consider to be racism. And that's not why I share this. But I also was not raised to think any less of other races because everyone that I associated with was a different race. So I remember sitting in class learning about racism and thinking, why would you think less of anybody because of their race? Now, would you know that I had been through that, that I experienced that? No, you'd look at the color of my skin and you'd say, I get that I can't understand because of the color of my skin. I had two really close friends that they called all of us the N-word. And they told us, you could call us the N-word. To them, it was like friend or dude, like the way we use dude. I never did because I had learned about the history of the word. And I realize there's a difference in how you end the word. But I didn't participate in that. But that was very common language in my friend group. And so I can understand how somebody coming out of that friend group might not understand the history of that word. And in using that word, that wouldn't make a member of that group what you think it makes them for using that word. It only becomes that once you've learned what that word is, what the history is, and you continue to use it. But you don't know any of that just looking at somebody who has used the word. But we are so quick and so fast to judge. And the reason that I bring this up is because I believe and I know that racism is still a huge problem in this country. That profiling still exists, that discrimination still exists. And I want to continue to progress forward in this society to that dream state, if possible, where people are judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. And I believe we have a long way to go. But you are never going to cross that bridge. You are never going to overcome that divide using labels and language like is used in this song. Never, never. So while it may generate news coverage, the reality is what it does is it chases everybody into their corners. Now, we've all put a label on it. None of us are reaching out and thinking about the viewpoints and thoughts of the other side. And so what have you done? In trying to unite people, you have divided people. Congratulations. Congratulations. That's what you have done. Manuel Zamora says, unfortunately, many American towns suffer from the scars of redlining. It continues to segregate our cities, preventing interaction with different people. Oh, modern zoning doesn't help. Look, I just think that any efforts that are designed to bridge divides, to help people understand, to look in their heart and their soul and question whether or not their beliefs are based upon some form of racism or privilege or anything else, any conversation cannot lead with a label and an attack, and it must include the humanization of the group that you are trying to get them to understand. If you cannot do that, then you will fail. And you will actually make it worse. And so we see opportunities in our society right now. Critical race theory, this opportunity here at this rally, this assembly, to where opportunities are there to change hearts and minds. But because of the tactics being used, you're doing exactly the opposite. And that is sad. That is shameful. And, you know, typically when people talk about groups in wide ways, they broad brush entire groups, those people typically are not looking to unite. They're typically looking to divide. And they use divisive language and they do it to get power because of the emotion that is generated by that. Honest, true attempts must be about humanizing the people that are being labeled, that are being discriminated against. We must come to an understanding that we are all mostly alike. And the things that separate us are so small. They're infinitesimal. And we're all pursuing the same thing. And a little bit of understanding in our society could go a long way. Let's see, Mike says, a lot of it's regional. In Southern Florida for decades, the N-word ending in A was used by everyone in virtually every middle to low-income neighborhoods. And to do this, it's a regional reality. Context should matter, but in current era, someone conducting training using the word ending in A, saying it was unacceptable to use in the workplace, gets fired for using it, that word in the example of unacceptable language. I just had some interaction with somebody from that very area you're talking about. And we got into a discussion about the use of the word. And he was talking about how the word is still used by people of all colors. And it's not perceived the same as it is everywhere else. To me, that doesn't justify the excuse of the word, but it does point out that just because you heard the word does not mean that you know the intent and character of the person who used the word, and you don't know the background. So if you want them to have empathy for you and understanding for your situation, the fastest way to do that is to find empathy and understanding for their situation and to seek understanding there. Now, I will tell you, after this discussion that went on for a couple of days with this individual from Southern Florida, I believe that I cut into his understanding quite a bit, and that he's going to choose to try and work that language out of his vocabulary. And I would have never gotten to that point if I would have just labeled him right up front and said, I get that you can't understand because of the color of your skin. That's what's so crazy about all of this, if you ask me. The best of intentions, and you just don't understand that this is going to create a conflict. It is. Let's all learn that the labels don't help. the judging of either side based upon the color of their skin is wrong, and that the fastest road to overcoming these things is empathy and putting a human face on conflict. So that is what I had to share with you. And then I've got somebody on on Podbean using all the language that I'm talking about that you shouldn't use. Fortunately, their comments are not here on the screen. In fact, I wonder, I haven't used Podbean much. Let me see here. I wonder if I have the ability to say goodbye to this individual. There it is. They're gone. Now, I will tell you, in the last 20 years of being a broadcaster, I've probably blocked 3 people. You guys know I love the opposite opinion, but this person, just too much. Mike says, I would highly recommend anyone listen to Dr. Thomas Sowell on this topic. There's a wealth of information that is well-researched and honestly presented in context. Mike says, another issue is of this is a culture war, is the ever-expanding and encompassing of the term racism into nearly everything. Milk is racist. Cultural appropriation is racist, like cornrows, when cornrow-style hair has its origins in Greece. Let me tell you something about cultural appropriation. I think it's a bunch of nonsense. I really do. If somebody sees your hair and they like your hair, why can't they do your hair? If they see something of your culture that they like, why can't they adopt it? Now, if they do so in some mocking way, or they do so blackface or, something else, and there's a condescending tone to it, then that's, it's weird. It's like we want to teach multiculturalism. You know, we want to have celebrations in school of Cinco de Mayo and celebrate cultures, other cultures. But don't you dare adopt any of those cultures. I think that is so ridiculous. You look at anything in our society. I mean, America is a melting pot of cultures that have kind of melded into each other. And this idea that your culture is yours alone and nobody can touch it, I think that there is a dangerous element to that that leads to judgment and racism. When people want to emulate you, when they want to be like you, when they see some part of your culture that they think is cool, that contributes to growth and understanding for everybody. Now, if they're doing it in such a way that is not representative of the reality of that situation, we see that a lot with Native Americans and how elements of that culture have made its way into mascots and things like that. I understand that. I think that there is some legitimacy to that in some ways of how those things are used. Some of them, not all of them. But when people are just doing it because they saw it and thought it was cool, knock it off with the cultural appropriation stuff. Knock it off. Feel flattered. I don't know what it is. But it's them saying that they like whatever it is that you do. And to say that they can't, that's divisive. And again, if they're doing it in a way that you feel degrades what it is that you do, then help them understand. Help them understand the true history of it. I can't stand the cultural appropriation concept, especially in my in my own upbringing, I've already told you where I grew up as the only white person in my friend group. Guess what music we listened to? We listened to rap. We listened to my first music in high school was Run DMC. It was rap. It was R&B. And to this day, if you look at my playlist on my phone, it is R&B, it's rap. I've expanded to a lot of other things, but at the core, I had a car. I had a Chevy Sprint with 10-inch woofers in the back. I wanted 12s, but I had 10-inch woofers. Many of you have seen me dance. There's some videos out there that I did for KSL where I dance. And it's dances that I learned in the clubs in California to a certain style of music. And I could be accused all day long of some type of appropriation. But that's what I grew up in. That's what my friend group was. There's no ill intent there. And there's nothing wrong there, if you ask me. Heather says, I'm terrified of this. My 9-year-old loves cultures. And when she was learning about Native Americans, she was so intrigued. She noticed a girl in her dance class with darker skin and made a comment about her skin color and wondered if she was Native American. Thankfully, her mother was sweet and understanding. Yeah, thankfully, Heather. We all know that could have turned into just a crazy thing. Many of you know or don't know, my wife is, she's half Hispanic. And everywhere we go, everywhere we've lived, the predominant culture of the area has adopted her and immediately treats her as though she is part of that community. So when we lived in California, we'd go up to a cash register or something else, and people would speak Spanish to her, assuming immediately that she was Spanish speaking. What was funny is I was the Spanish speaker because I served an LDS mission in Miami, Florida, and I speak Spanish, not like I used to. But so they would speak Spanish to my wife, and then I would respond to them, and we would just go in this circle. And sometimes they'd never realize that I was the one answering. Then we lived in Hawaii, and all of the Hawaiians spoke Pidgin to my wife. They immediately assumed she was from Hawaii. And she didn't speak Pidgin. We got to where we could understand it. We've had people from India who automatically adopt her into their culture. This is all innocent. There's nothing terrible or wrong about it, especially if we can all be understanding. Like Heather says, fortunately, their mother was sweet and understanding. We shouldn't be running around in fear of these things and so quick to judge when we see them, because it cuts both ways. If you are using this terminology or stereotyping or being a racist against somebody, that's wrong, but it cuts the other way. When you immediately assume that because what you see or what you hear sends you on an emotional response of judging that person based solely on this 1 second of time, and now you think you know everything about them and everything in their heart, that's just no way to live. That is no way to live. Jenny says, thank you so much, Jay, for talking about this. I have to run, but I appreciate this conversation. Have a good night. Thank you, Jenny. Thank you for joining us. We just need to all stand back and not be so quick to judge anymore. It's not healthy on either side. It's not healthy. We need to give room for empathy and understanding. Mike says, another source to look at as far as cultural integration, the racial history of Cuba is fascinating. Cuban nationalism is arguably one of the most embracing of all races. An easy example is the cultural argument over where Cecilia Cruz was born. Cubans say she was born in Havana of Haitian parents, yet native Haitians swear up and down she was born in Port-au-Prince. Cubans loved her so much that if she was indeed born in Haiti, they adopted her as her own. We see something similar with, who was I having this conversation with somebody? We do the same thing with Christ. You know, each culture has an imagery of Christ based upon their own culture. And I would have to think that based upon what we know about genetics and the area that Christ is from, that there's a pretty good chance that he doesn't look anything like the majority of the representations around the country. Mike also says, I'm half Cuban. Growing up here, I never really spoke Spanish. I moved to Utah, and for the first couple of years, I'd be approached by some of by default, spoke to me in Spanish. I would laugh at their response when I replied, I don't speak Spanish. but I'll bet you love black beans and rice, Mike. Am I right? Or am I judging you culturally? Tostones? Hmm? And just in case anybody's wondering, Cuban Spanish is the hardest Spanish to understand. And then Puerto Rican. Mike says, oh, yes. anyway, I just think it's important to ask the question ahead of time. How are we going to break through to a bunch of teenage minds about race relations? Are we going to do so by calling them racist right out of the gate? I don't think so. Manuel says, Jay, love this episode. Also grew up in California. My group of friends were Indian, Chinese, Iraqi, and white. I didn't know we were different. It's exactly my upbringing. Exactly. In fact, I remember moving back to Utah from California, and I saw that there was no color. It was a shock. It was a culture shock to me because I was so used to it. David says, I served a lot of my mission on the reservation. One guy in a ward I served in went to the Dominican Republic, and so many members there instantly assumed he was Spanish. And it's not a crime. It's not. You know, and a lot of those people are just trying to be nice and friendly. And if you run around getting upset every time somebody assumes that you're something because of your color of your skin, I would suggest you ought not to run around and do it to other people when you don't know their background either. My wife's perspective has always been, she just loves that people want to own her. She's always seen it as a compliment that they see her and they're like, oh, she must be with us. She's never seen it as a negative. She has such a great attitude about that. Manuel says, yeah, moving to Saratoga Springs, Utah from California was really interesting. Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I love differences in culture. I love and embrace, you know, this is going to sound weird, but like, I don't know if it's because of my upbringing or something, but I watch people with strong historical culture and I'm envious of it because it seems to be bonding with their family. And far reaching. And I'm like, I don't have anything like that in my life. The most, you know, tradition that we have is Thanksgiving and Christmas. And even then it's pretty pathetic when it comes to tradition. And as I worked among the Cuban population and Nicaraguans and, you know, most of the people in Miami at that time were either from from Cuba, from the Dominican Republic, or somewhere in South America, not a huge Mexican population. But I loved every culture, and I learned as much as I could about that culture, and I learned to identify each culture. I could knock on somebody's door and they'd open the door, and I would know instantly they were from Argentina by their accent, or Colombian or Cuban. And I actually found out, like, these small places that only people that live there would know about. And the minute they'd say, yeah, I'm from Argentina, I'd say, oh yeah, I'm from so-and-so. And they'd go, really? And I'd be like, no, I'm like with Cuba, Mike, it was always Oriente. I'd always say, I'm from Oriente. And they'd like, really? And they're like, no, I'm lying to you. But, you know, the other thing that Mike will tell you and so many other people will tell you is that among those cultures, like in Cuba, there's a whole strain of blonde-haired, light-skinned people. And you would never guess by looking at them that they were from Cuba. So I feel like there's such a rich source of culture and history that if everyone is allowed to like and participate and there's broad understanding, instead of this idea of slapping your hand and saying, no, that's mine, you can't hand it. You can't have it. I never understood that. Never. I just don't get it. Just don't understand. Mike says, arroz con pollo. David says, with corn tortillas. Oh, you guys are killing me. Beefsteak and penne asada. Oof, you're killing me right now. Absolutely killing me. Anyway, so you know, and I do the same thing. Like, I look at cultures and I'm like, yeah, how would that be, you know, to have that strong culture running through my family? But I do the same thing with families in general. Like, my wife, she kind of laughs at me because I watched Duck Dynasty and I watched Wahlburgers. And she's like, why do you like these shows? And I realized that why I liked them is because these were adult, strong adult families that had strong bonds with their siblings. And I didn't have that growing up. And I admire it and I want it. I long for it. And so I'm gravitated towards these shows where these adult children still see each other all the time. Their families hang out together. They're together on Thanksgiving and all of these other things. And I don't have any of that. And so I gravitate towards those things. I find myself gravitating towards other cultures and towards those family dynamics. And one of the things that I've decided as an adult is, or as a parent, is that what I wanted more than anything was for my children to have that type of relationship. And I lament the fact that my children are a quarter Hispanic and they don't have that culture running through their family. And I feel like that's somewhat of a loss. And they don't identify that way. But you would look at them and you would start speaking Spanish to them instantly. So that's just my whole perspective on the race issue. Mike says, wasn't it a girl from Utah that was wearing a Japanese-style dress to prom, where a Twitter dingus, my culture is not your costume, and it turned out the dress originated in the U.S., but the post-war Japanese women loved the dress. They embraced it. I kind of remember that story. I mean, it's like fortune cookies are not really from a specific culture. Those kind of things. Like, I understand if it's something sacred, you know, if it's like, you know, if somebody is taking something that I religiously or culturally consider to be sacred and it's not understood and it's being appropriated by some other group. But my response to that would not be anger and hatred or labeling. My response to that would be, hey, can I share with you what this means to me? Do you mind if, can we take a minute and I'll share with you why this is very sacred and important to me? That's how you build bridges and understanding. When you lash out and you assume that that person is has got some motive or something else, that's when things get absolutely ridiculous. David says, fortune cookies have always let me down. I know, especially the ones that just tell you who you are. Like, you're this or you're that. I don't want to hear that crap. I want to know my fortune, what my future looks like. All right. Okay. We've gone a while now on this topic, an hour. So I think at an hour, TikTok usually throws me off, but they have not yet. Thank you to those of you joining us on TikTok. We've only been back on TikTok for a few weeks now. So, and okay, so let's move on to the next story here. And we'll just do this quickly. I think we've talked about this quite a bit, but it appears that on the next Utah ballot, there is going to be a measure to get rid of mail-in ballots. This is a group calling itself Secure Vote Utah, is hoping to get enough signatures to put an initiative on the 2022 ballot to do away with Utah's mail-in elections in favor of all paper ballots. They also want to get rid of ranked choice voting. They want to make it harder to register to vote and get rid of or reduce the number of days that are available to early vote. Now, the only thing that they say in this story, and I'm going to reach out to them, is that it's more secure this way. But they want to make it clear that they're not making allegations about irregularities in Utah elections. They just believe this is more secure. And I'm glad they're not making allegations about voter fraud. That's refreshing. In my opinion, I think that you really need to show that there are blatant, obvious flaws in the current system to make the excuse to get rid of it. They also want to make it so you know the winner same day. So streaming through all of this is kind of some of the rhetoric that we've been hearing when it comes to getting rid of mail-in ballots. I do not support this measure. I am a huge fan of mail-in ballots. I think that there are ways to make mail-in ballots more secure if you feel we need other security measures. I've told you one of those ways. I think you can build in the blockchain or two-factor authentication to make it even more secure, but still make it available to everybody. So I am not a fan of this initiative. Mike says mail-in ballots are fine so long as they are requested by voters, follow all the same protocols of other ballots. I also think that voting months ahead of an election is risky since things that could sway voters could arise shortly before voting. So my question is, why do they have to be requested? Why? We've been doing it like this in Utah since 2012. Every registered person gets a mail-in ballot. Why does it have to be requested? We have seen no signs of widespread election fraud in our country. In our country, yeah, and also in our state. We have, this system has borne out to be secure and has not been played, has not swayed an election. Why does it have to be requested? That I don't understand. Why can't you just say they have to go through the same process that somebody requesting a ballot would have, and that's registering to vote? Mike says, no excuse, mail-in ballots are highly suspect. No, they're not. They're not, Mike. They're not. But no case, no evidence of major problems. They're not highly suspect. Even this group is not citing anything. I'll tell you when they became highly suspect. They became highly suspect when President Trump started saying they were problematic. That's when they became suspect. David says, I have confidence in our system. Mike sends me a link. Mike, we can look at that link when we go down the rabbit hole if you want. There are absolutely cases of individual voter fraud. And we're getting better and better at that every single year. But as far as overturning elections, especially here in the state of Utah, no indication. And as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to say that they're highly suspect, then you ought to have some pretty strong evidence backing up that they are highly suspect. Let me see here. I'm looking at that story right now, Mike. Hang on, everybody. Sorry, everybody, for the blank airtime. Did you read this story, Mike? Did you read it? So the first story is about somebody being driven to the polls. I'm looking for... So this one guy was given debt forgiveness to go vote, but he voted in person. They're unable to identify who cast the uncounted votes that were later added. Two votes were in favor of Mack. One of those voters voluntarily confirmed he voted for Mack, court records show. I'm looking for the mail-in voter fraud here. Sorry, I'll read the rest of this story. No, I'm done. The fact that Bobby Taylor appeared in person 2 days after the election to cure his mail-in vote is proof that Bobby Taylor voted on... So this is... read the story, dude. This is nothing close to any legitimization of the idea that mail-in ballots are suspect. I could bring up for you, I could show you individual examples of voter fraud across the country. They happen every time, and they can happen with in-person, and they can happen here and there with mail-in ballots. But to make the claim highly suspect, you're going to have to do better than that. David says, I've never requested a ballot. It gives me the flexibility to vote in the way that works for me. And Mike, I do agree with your statement that people may, if they vote early, then they may find out something later on about the candidate and want to take back their vote. That's not an excuse against mail-in ballots. That's an excuse against voting early as an individual. It's a fear that I have. So I don't like to send my ballot in that early because I'm waiting for the surprise, you know, that's going to come out. So that's a reason to impact how people decide to carry out their vote. I don't see that as a reason against mail-in ballots. Mike says mail-in ballots are often sent in early. Yeah, it's great. It's awesome. People want to send them in early, send them in early. I don't because of what you talked about. I want to wait until, you know, if something comes out. But guess what? Something could come out 2 weeks after the election. Is that an argument against having 1 day to vote? No, it's not. That's, to me, that's just, if you feel that they shouldn't vote early, then send a message to everybody. Hey, don't send that ballot in so fast. You might find something out. It does not make mail-in ballots highly suspect. I would like to see the evidence that makes mail-in ballots highly suspect. If this does make the ballot, I will, if this initiative, Secure Vote Utah, does make the ballot, I will be spending a considerable amount of time fighting against it, because I'm a big fan of the mail-in voting. I think that if there are any security threats, those could be easily handled with two-factor authentication. But even then, they would just be making a very secure system that much more secure. And I can promise you, in a state run by Republicans, that if they had any indication that mail-in ballot could be gamed by the other party or anybody else, they'd be all over it. That's what people seem to fail to understand, is that both parties are interested in making sure the other party can't game their system. David says, I send in my ballot the week of. David says, agreed, JMac, about the security. Let's check over here on TikTok. People just watching. So there's that. And then I mentioned this story, so might as well share it. Now, this is NPR, so you may want to discount it right out of the gate. But this was a study done purely based upon demographics. They did not ask about party membership. This is simply a look at country counties that went towards a Republican or a Democrat, and how those counties are faring when it comes to COVID. So since May of 2021, people living in counties that voted heavily for Donald Trump during the last presidential election have been nearly three times as likely to die from COVID-19 as those who live in areas that went for President Biden. NPR looked at deaths per 100,000 people in roughly 3,000 counties across the U.S. From May 2021, the point at which vaccinations widely became available, people living in counties that went 60% or higher for Trump in November 2020 had 2.78 times the death rates of those that went for Biden. Counties with an even higher share of the vote for Trump saw higher COVID-19 mortality rates. In October, the reddest tenth of the country saw death rates that were six times higher than the bluest tenth, according to Charles Gaba, an independent healthcare analyst who's been tracking partisanship trends during the pandemic and helped to review NPR's methodology. Those numbers have dropped slightly in recent weeks, Gaba said. It's back down to around 5.5 times higher. The trend was robust, even when controlling for age, which is the primary demographic risk of COVID-19 mortality. The data also reveal a major contributing factor to the death rate difference. The higher the vote share for Trump, the lower the vaccination rate. The analysis only looked at the geographic location of COVID-19 deaths. The exact political views of each person taken by the disease remains unknowable. But the strength of the association, combined with polling information about vaccination, strongly suggests that Republicans are being disproportionately affected. I don't think this is any surprise. Recent polling shows that partisanship, this is the most shocking statement to me of the year. Recent polling shows that partisanship is now the single strongest identifying predictor of whether someone is vaccinated. Polling also shows that mistrust in official sources of information and exposure to misinformation about both COVID-19 and the vaccines runs high among Republicans. This is Liz Hamel, Vice President of Public Opinion and Survey Research at the Kaiser Family Foundation. She says an unvaccinated person is 3 times as likely to lean Republican as they are to lean Democrat. Political affiliation is now the strongest indicator of whether someone is vaccinated, she says. If I wanted to guess if somebody was vaccinated or not, I could only know one thing about them. I would probably ask what their party affiliation is. It was not always this way. Earlier in the pandemic, many different groups expressed hesitancy towards getting vaccinated. African Americans, younger Americans, and rural Americans all had significant portions of their demographic that resisted, vaccination. But over time, the vaccination rates in those demographics have risen, while the rate of Republican vaccination against COVID-19 has flatlined at just 59%, according to the latest numbers from Kaiser. By comparison, 91% of Democrats are vaccinated. Wow. You know, what's crazy about that is when you look at the Trump counties and the Biden counties, Trump is responsible for fast-tracking the vaccine. Trump got the vaccine. He didn't tell everybody when he got it, but we now know he did get vaccinated. He has confirmed that. And Trump has said at his rallies for people to get vaccinated. He got booed, but that's what he did. Now, he also downplayed the vaccine and the virus and said it would go away without the vaccine on more than one occasion before he came up with the vaccine. It's like he was against it before he was for it. For some reason, this still persists. And it is amazing to me once again to see a climate where Republicans cannot take credit for the millions of lives that they have sold, that they have saved with this vaccine. They cannot take credit for it. It is one of the most bizarre political outcomes that I have ever seen. It should be that today Donald J. Trump is seen as the savior during the pandemic. Operation Warp Speed gets the vaccine pushed through. Biden and Harris said that they would question the vaccine. If it was fast-tracked by Trump, it came through with amazing success. Millions of lives saved. Trump could be going around the country with his Make America Healthy Again tour. Republicans celebrating their leadership during the pandemic. It's not happening. Instead, the majority of Republicans, for some reason, not majority, I guess they're at 59%, so majority is not correct. But the number one factor in determining whether or not somebody's vaccinated or not is if they're a Republican. Whew. David says, I just got hit with a bunch of non-surprises. Mike says, this article is from the HuffPo. I can't speak for the other states, but last I checked, Florida is currently at 1 in 100,000 deaths, 36 total in the last 7 days. Yet Biden took credit from day one of his administration to delivery of vaccines. Well, let's be fair, Mike. That's what any president would have done. That's what presidents do. They take credit for the successes during their administration, and they get blamed for the failures during their administration. That's why Biden is being labeled with all of the inflation, all of the supply chain, all of the hiring crisis, the gas prices. He's being labeled for all of those things, even though they would have happened to any president that is in office right now. So you get the good with the bad. You get to claim the vaccine and pushing it out, and you also get blamed for the bad, which is the way it works, unfortunately. Mike says, the main disagreement is about forced vaccinations, not necessarily anti-vax. Now, these numbers are from going back as far as when the vaccines first came out. The mandates are something new within the last few months. this decision against the vaccine on the part of Republicans happened long before any mandates were being suggested or put in place. So blaming it on the mandates, yeah, there are people that certainly once the mandates came out decided for sure they're not going to get vaccinated. But you know what? Those people, if they believed in the vaccine, they would have been vaccinated already, in my opinion, in my humble opinion. Mike says, well, that may be due to the canceling of future pipelines. No, it's not. We know why the gas prices went up. It had nothing to do with Biden. And gas prices reached just as high a point during Trump's administration to sit and pretend like the president has this huge impact on immediate gas prices is just not reality. It's just not. But again, it makes the current president an easy target. And I think it's unfortunate because when we don't understand the factors behind what's really happening, we tend to make poor decisions. So the label is going to stick on Biden that he's the reason for all of these things. And so America, and I believe, will not be making an educated decision when they choose the next guy, because they'll be making it thinking that somehow, somewhere out there, there was somebody who could have done something that would have made it so these supply chain issue problems didn't happen. They all started during the Trump administration. He is not to blame for them. We give presidents way, way too much credit. Mike says, man, I wish I could post graphs. The misrepresentation of gas prices during the Trump admin had been shown to be misleading at best. Mike, we know why the gas prices went up. It wasn't because Biden canceled a tar sand pipeline. That's not why the gas prices went up. We had where all the refineries are. They're all along the Gulf Coast. You had some massive hurricanes that affected supply chain. You also had everybody stop driving. So production goes way down. And then all of a sudden, we all get in our cars and start driving again. You don't have to go searching. You really don't. It's the same. Everybody on the globe cut down production of chips, of everything else. And as this country reopens, everybody's going to have, as every country, because here's the other curiouser and curiouser observation. Guess who else is having a supply chain problem? Oh, every other country on the planet. I just read a story just the other day. The UK is having a major supply chain problem. Oh my goodness. How is Biden affecting their supply chain problem and their gas price problem? David says, canceling pipelines that don't exist don't increase gas prices. Yeah. In fact, I wonder if I have that story. I should have. If I was doing things right, I should have flagged things. But I'll bet I didn't. Let me check here. Boom. Oh, I do have the story of the guy who wore a fake arm in Italy to get vaccinated. Did you catch this story? Yeah, he got caught. You got to give him props for creativity, though. Let me see. I don't see that story. Oh, well, I guess I could always use the Google. And then bring that up. So See if this sounds familiar to you, this top line here. Instead of putting UK, put US. As restrictions start to lift in the UK, demand for goods and services rose steeply, significantly outstripping supply and production. Raw material scarcity, labor shortages, rising energy costs, a lack of CO2, and transport and logistic issues have since compounded the problems. But somehow Biden's responsible for the supply chain issues. That's interesting, isn't it? Here we go again. Britain's gas crisis explained. These are all things that all the countries of the earth are facing right now. But we're going to blame Biden because it's politically expedient to do that. The problem with that, as I said, is if you think Biden is responsible for that, you're probably not going to make a very educated choice when you decide who you vote for in the next election. If you can get played that easily, then you're not making a choice based upon reality. You're just not. Let's see here. Sorry, lots of breaks in the show today. And that, by the way, any of the stories that I share with you on the show, you can find them in the description of the show. I put a link there, and even stories that I don't talk about, you'll see them put them on. You'll see them put them on. Whatchamacallit? On. I completely lost my train of thought. Mike says, how do investors speculate? They have to know that things may well affect the supplies, whatever item they're investing in. Take out a new pipeline and that will have an effect on the future. Mike, the pipeline is a tar sand pipeline that he shut down. And again, I mean, you just find story after story as to why... Let's see. Here we go. I mean, we could just do this all night. It's kind of down the rabbit hole, but here you go. Business Insider. Three reasons why gas prices are so high right now. No thanks. Demand has increased as the economy reopened and Americans have begun driving home. Supply has been constrained because of lower U.S. production and OPEC decisions. Let's read it here. Gotten worse. There's a graph for you. So, take that for what you will with the graph. The reason for the spike are textbook supply and demand from an economics textbook. Americans have gotten back to driving more this summer as the pandemic has moderated and a combination of domestic supply interruptions, so what I was talking about, the hurricanes, and trouble in energy markets overseas have made crude oil more expensive. So then it goes, demand is up. There's vehicle miles traveled. There's a nice little graph there. You guys can't see this very well. Let me make it a little bit smaller. There we go. So there's vehicle miles traveled. This one is U.S. average gas prices. And then, U.S. oil production and refining haven't kept up. In addition to that ramp up in demand, there have been some big supply constraints as well. The Energy Information Administration noted in mid-September that Hurricane Ida shut down a large swath of the U.S. oil drilling and refining capacity in the Gulf. While rigs and refineries have quickly come back online since, crude oil inventories remain low, suggesting an ongoing lack of supply. EIA wrote that as of late September, oil stored at Cushing, Oklahoma, one of the main crude depots in the U.S., was down 40% from the start of the year. There's a graph of our stockpile. And a crunch in domestic oil supply and stockpiles coupled with a rise in demand leads to higher gas prices. Energy markets around the world are in a crunch. In addition to domestic oil supply slowing down, oil and energy markets overseas also aren't helping matters on the supply front. OPEC and other major oil exporting countries have repeatedly agreed to only modest increases in production, despite oil consumers like the U.S. and India pushing for higher exports. The cartel most recently agreed to increase in production after Biden called for more production to ease rising prices. Let's see here. I'm just looking to see if there's any decision made here by Biden that, no, Business Insider doesn't cite anything under Biden's control. In fact, the two things Biden has tried to do, which is get OPEC to increase demand, and he has released supplies from the oil reserves. Yeah, no. So there you go. But you are right there on the one graph there, Mike. It did not show that prices were just as high under Trump. So you were right about that. I will retract that statement. So there you go. Nothing to do with Biden. Now, I do think, although many of these things are not caused by a current president, there are things that current presidents can do to solve them, and they should be judged upon those things. Just like, you know, I don't blame Trump or Biden for the supply chain issue, I do think that they have responsibility to do everything in their power to try and solve it, for sure. Let's see here. Again, Mike, I'm not finding anything, any decision by Biden, that puts the blame on him for the gas prices. So if you have that, send it over. Be glad to see it. Because I think officially, aren't we officially, cause I'm done with my stories. Aren't we officially, I think we are officially down the rabbit hole. Although I don't want to spend hours tonight going down the rabbit hole. Because my son wants to watch the Nets. What is it? Brain Frog. Nets Mavericks game. So no spoiler alerts. All right. None of that. Let me get Restream up here. Oh, you don't know what Restream is. That's the chat. Mike says, so I have a fair question. If you can use articles from decidedly left-leaning sources like HuffPo in a previous segment of today's show, I didn't use HuffPo. Can I use sources like Fox Business? You can absolutely use Fox Business. I don't have much of a problem with Fox Business, but I used an NPR story. I didn't use HuffPo. You may have them in the same category, but I haven't thrown any of your sources under the bus today. I don't believe. We could say, why are I don't consider Business Insider a credible source. Fox News, you do have to kind of grain of salt there. Let's see here. Mike says he tries to avoid using Fox in general. Here is a Fox story. Oil prices jumped Monday after OPEC and allied oil prices countries stayed with their gradual approach to restoring output within wholesale gas prices. So this is some expert they had on to talk about why gas prices are up. He brings up supply and demand. Let's see. He doesn't bring up Biden anywhere in that Fox Business story. Let's see, Mike just sent a story. Oh, from the former EPA administrator. So this is, let's see, let's pull this up on the screen and look at it. All right. Man, how am I going to get these up on the screen for you guys? Well, that'll work. Andrew Wheeler, who headed the Environmental Protection Agency during the Trump administration, argued on Tuesday that Biden administration has done everything that they can over the last year to decrease American production of oil and gas. Looking to see what he says he did. He says the Biden administration and Nancy Pelosi are trying to tax oil even more. In August, the White House tried to blame OPEC and Russia for rising gas prices after the Biden administration hamstrung U.S. oil producers with policies that hampered domestic oil and gas. Let's read what they have to say. Man, my internet's slow tonight. Could it be that I'm broadcasting out to like 10 different platforms? Hello, internet. Hello. Crashed. Where did it go? Sorry, guys, so much dead air tonight. I guess that doesn't matter when you're live streaming, huh? I'll pull it up on this side. Oh, so these are all stories about individuals blasting Biden. None of them are saying what he did. They're bringing up the Keystone Pipeline, but that didn't, now we're getting audio here too. Okay. I'm gonna get, let's see. Sorry, I cannot play that for you or I'll get blasted for copyright. So let me mute that. So they're just bringing up the Keystone Pipeline. And that's it. So there you go. Zachary says, whatever the source, you need to make sure it has substance, evidence, and not just opinion or speculation. Yeah, these are all people who are former this or so-and-so that. That are blaming Biden, but the best they can do, it appears to me as I read those, is the Keystone Pipeline, which is for tar sands and did not have when was the Keystone Pipeline supposed to be done? I mean, this is a complete red herring. if you ask me. But the good news is I think I have the internet back. Mm-mm-mm. Yeah. So that's all I'm seeing is people blaming it on the Keystone. That's all I got. Maybe you have something else. Sweet Tat on Twitch joining us says lovely background. Thank you. We would normally have snow by this time in Utah and we haven't. And so I've decided to bring my own snow, BYOS, to the conversation. So there you go. So any other comments about Biden being responsible for all of these things? Let me know. I'll be glad to talk about it as we go down the rabbit hole. Or anything else you want to talk about today, I'd be glad to discuss it. Or we can be done, and I can go watch basketball. I set this light in a weird place, and look, it creates this kind of halo below. I'm trying to get it so that it comes up, you know, and hits me here, so that you don't have a shadow for my hat. Because if I don't wear the hat, then I probably have to do my hair, and I probably didn't do my hair because I work from home all day on the phone. It's a whole thing. So there you go. Mike says my internet totally crashed. Maybe it's a conspiracy, Mike. Mine was giving me a hard time too. I do have that one story. Let's read that. About the guy in Italy. Who got very creative. He's a dentist. Here we go. A dentist in Italy faces possible criminal charges after trying to receive a coronavirus vaccine in a fake arm made of silicone. A nurse in the north city of Biella said she could tell right away that something was off when a man presented the phony limb for a shot on Thursday. When I uncovered the arm, I felt that the skin was cold and gummy and the color was too light. She said she initially thought the 57-year-old man was an amputee and had mistakenly offered the wrong arm. She lifted his shirt and saw a silicone arm. I understood immediately that the man was trying to avoid the vaccination by using a silicone prosthetic into which he hoped that I would inject the drug. The nurse said the man acknowledged he did not want a vaccine but to obtain a super health pass, which from Monday will be required to enter restaurants, cinemas, theaters, and other venues in Italy. He had already been suspended from work because of his refusal to get vaccinated, which Italy requires for medical personnel. So needless to say, Italy has, even though they have a much, I think their vaccination rate is, yeah, look at that, 85%. They are going all out with vaccination requirements. So people are going to extreme measures. Mike says, dang, his internet just came back and his hat fell off too. anything else you guys want to talk about? Yes, I am following, and we talked about it last Thursday. We'll probably talk about it again on this coming Thursday. All of the crazy developments when it comes to the shooting in Michigan and these two parents. I've never seen a more blatant case where parents should have done more. It looks like possibly administrators should have done more. It's not too often with a school shooting or a mass shooting where you can pinpoint a moment when if something was done, it wouldn't have happened. And I think it's pretty obvious in this case that that moment came and went. And the parents especially should have been able and should have known that this was an absolute potential and should have found out if that young man had the gun on him before they went back to class. So, but I'll continue to watch that as more information comes out. Like I said, we don't normally have that moment of clarity, and that's why it's hard to go back and say this parent should be held accountable or the school administration should be held accountable. But in this case, I think it's pretty clear. So far. We learned, like with Kyle Rittenhouse, that the narrative doesn't always match what finally ends up being presented in court. So we'll certainly want to watch that and see what happens in that regard. Other than that, my friends, I don't have a huge amount of other things that I have been following, at least today. If you are just joining us, I am here live on Tuesday and Thursday night at 9:30. We talk about all the issues that are out there, and we love your comments, and we love dissenting opinions, and we will focus on all of them. If you are joining us, please, for the first time, please take a minute to follow. If you're on Twitch, if you're on YouTube, please subscribe. And also, please take a minute and go to jmcfarland.com and become a member of the JMAC Club. That helps me bring this content to you on a regular basis. And you also get access to great stuff like my books, my webinars, all kinds of other stuff that I'm working on all the time. So with that, thank you, Mike. I will check out that link that you sent me regarding the shooting situation, and we'll talk about it on Thursday. Other than that, everybody, how long did we go tonight? Oh, it's a short night, hour and 49 minutes. That's a short broadcast. So with that, thank you so much, everybody. Hope you have a wonderful night. Here's to maybe snow in the state of Utah. Can we make that happen? We'll have to see. Other than that, I'll talk to you on Thursday night. Good night, everybody.